This is the Zodiac speaking. I want to report a murder. If you will go 1 mile east on Columbus Parkway, you will find kids in a brown car. They were shot with a 9mm Luger. I also killed those kids last year. Goodbye. With this chilling phone call, a figure who would become one of the most infamous names in American true crime began his taunting of the police and his terrorizing of the public. Over the course of his reign of terror, the Zodiac Killer claimed responsibility for a series of brutal murders in Northern California, boasted of his intelligence, and mocked law enforcement's inability to catch him. His coded messages left behind tantalizing clues to his identity, or was it identities? You see, while decades of theories center around the idea of the Zodiac Killer being one elusive man, very few have asked themselves this essential question. What if the Zodiac was not one man, but a constructed myth pieced together by letters and theories? What if California was plagued by sick individuals so desperate for infamy that they took the lives of countless innocent people? What if we were wrong this entire time? In this episode of Still Unsolved, we ask that very question. This is the case of the Zodiac Killer.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound, limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On December 20th, 1968, 16-year-old Betty Lou Jensen and 17-year-old David Faraday set out on their first official date after being a couple for 2 weeks. They told the Jensen family they would attend a Christmas concert at Hogan High School. They promised to return home by 11 p.m. However, instead of going to the concert, the two visited a friend, grabbed a bite at a local restaurant, and eventually made their way to Lake Herman Road, a well-known spot for young couples. At around 10:15 p.m., David parked his mother's Rambler along the secluded road. At around 11, another car pulled up beside them. A man exited the vehicle and, likely holding a gun, may have ordered them out of the car. As David stepped out, he was fatally shot in the head. Betty Lou tried to flee, but was tragically shot 5 times in the back, managing to cover 28 feet before she fell. Both young lives were lost at the scene. Initially, investigators suspected a drug-related motive in the deaths of Jensen and Faraday, and two local gang members even confessed to the crime. However, police found these confessions unconvincing, largely due to the fact that neither victim had any ties to narcotics. With few leads, detectives next considered the possibility of a personal grudge. They briefly focused on a fellow student who had known Betty Lou Jensen and might have harbored jealousy. However, the student's alibi was solid, and he was quickly cleared of suspicion. With no promising leads, the case eventually went cold. It wasn't until more than 6 months later that the suspected killer appeared to strike again. On July 4, 1969, 22-year-old Darlene Ferrin picked up her boyfriend, 19-year-old Michael Majo, with plans to go to Mr. Ed's Diner. At the last minute, they decided to instead venture to Blue Rock Springs Park, where their lives would come to a tragic end. Darlene parked her Corvair in the lot, and she and Michael sat talking for a while. As they chatted, another car arrived, filled with people who set off fireworks before driving off. Not long after, a different vehicle pulled up behind them, paused briefly, then drove away. 10 minutes later, the same car returned, stopping once more behind them. The driver got out, approached the passenger side, and shone a flashlight directly into their eyes, giving the impression he might be an officer. Momentarily blinded by the light, neither could react as he raised a gun, and fired 5 shots into the car. Thinking his task was complete, the attacker began to leave, but turned back after hearing Michael's groans. He fired 4 more shots, 2 at each of them. Miraculously, despite serious wounds to his head, chest, and neck, Michael survived. Sadly, Darlene succumbed to her injuries at the hospital. Almost an hour past midnight, a call came into the police just a short distance from their headquarters. In a flat, almost mechanical voice that sounded rehearsed, the caller took credit for the Independence Day attack and hinted at being behind the Benicia murders. Majot recalled the attacker as a white man, about 5'8", with a stocky build. He had a broad face and short, light brown, curly hair. While narrowing down possibilities was helpful, investigators were still left with few leads, worried it was only a matter of time before the killer would strike once more. On August 1st, the Zodiac sent his first cipher, which was a document containing coded messages using symbols in place of the letters of the alphabet. Those seeking to crack the message would have to discover the pattern used by the creator. The ciphers arrived in 3 separate parts, addressed to the San Francisco Examiner, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the Vallejo Times-Herald. In these messages, he claimed responsibility for the recent murders and demanded that his cipher be published, threatening a kill rampage if it was ignored. At the bottom of each letter, he included a crosshair symbol, establishing his now infamous signature. The newspapers printed the ciphers, and within a week, a teacher and his wife managed to decode the message. His wife identified likely phrases known as cribs that the Zodiac might have used. She correctly guessed that terms like kill and the phrase "I like killing" would appear. She also felt that the cipher might start with I, reflecting the killer's desire for attention. Her instincts proved accurate, and together the couple solved the cipher within just 20 hours. Chillingly, the message read, "I like killing people because it is so much fun. It is more fun than killing wild game in the forest, because man is the most dangerous animal of all. To kill something gives me the most thrilling experience. It is even better than getting your rocks off with a girl. The best part of it is that when I die, I will be reborn in paradise, and the people I have killed will become my slaves. I will not give you my name, because you will try to slow down or stop my collecting of slaves for my afterlife." With new insights from the letter and cipher, police began to piece together clues. The reference to hunting humans suggested a possible inspiration from The Most Dangerous Game, a 1924 short story by Richard Connell, in which a man hunts people for sport. A forensic psychologist analyzing the letter described it as reflecting a personality with feelings of inadequacy, warning that the writer likely intended to kill again. Following the letter's publication, the police attempted to draw more information from the alleged killer by publicly casting doubt on the letter's authenticity. In response, the writer reached out again, introducing himself with the phrase, "This is the Zodiac speaking," and providing specific details about the 2 murders, details that had never been publicly disclosed. There was then an eerie period of silence. No killings from the mysterious man had been reported, and no one knew when he was going to strike again. They would find their answer on September 27th with an attack at Lake Berryessa.
88% of the workweek is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app.
Buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound, limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On that day, 20-year-old Brian Hartnell and 22-year-old Cecilia Shepherd were having a peaceful picnic. The couple enjoyed their date by the scenic Lake Berryessa, savoring the early fall atmosphere and the beautiful surroundings. Suddenly, a man appeared, dressed in a black executioner's hood with clip-on sunglasses. He wore a chest piece marked with a crosshair symbol and approached them while holding a gun. The man carried a plastic clothesline he had pre-cut, ordering Cecilia to bind Brian's hands. After she did, he proceeded to tie her up as well. He claimed to be an escaped convict who had killed a guard and stolen a car, which he said was now too hot. He insisted he needed their car and money to reach Mexico. However, once both were restrained, he pulled out a knife and began stabbing Brian in the back as he lay face down, then turned his attention to Cecilia, who struggled desperately against her bonds. Leaving them both alive but gravely injured, the attacker then walked to their 1956 Volkswagen parked about 500 yards away. Using a black felt-tip pen, he drew his crosshair symbol on the car door and scrawled a message referencing the dates of the earlier shootings and the stabbing he'd just committed. Not long after, a fisherman and his son heard the couple's cries and quickly got help, rushing Brian and Cecilia to Queen of the Valley Hospital. Cecilia tragically passed away 2 days later. As with the previous attacks, the killer called the Napa police to take credit for the attack. The Lake Berryessa attack marked a dramatic shift in the Zodiac's approach compared to his earlier, highly effective methods. It's difficult to ignore the impression that the assailant intended to make it unmistakably clear that he was the Zodiac, though he oddly refrained from using that name during the encounter. Unlike any other crime, this attack involved a distinctive costume, and he left no written messages at any other scene. Additionally, the writing on the car door showed inconsistencies, suggesting it was either penned by multiple individuals or that the killer was intentionally altering his handwriting to mimic the style seen in previous Zodiac letters. Intriguingly, despite his numerous communications that followed, the Zodiac never explicitly took credit for Cecilia Shepherd's murder. If the Lake Berryessa attack showed a shift in Zodiac's pattern, his next and final confirmed killing veered in an even more unexpected direction. On October 11th, a white man entered the taxicab of 29-year-old Paul Stein. Departing from Union Square in San Francisco, the man requested that Stein drive to Washington and Maple Streets in the Presidio Heights neighborhood. For reasons unknown, he drove one block beyond the destination. At this point, the passenger suddenly shot him in the head. The killer then took Stein's wallet and car keys and tore off a portion of Stein's blood-stained shirt. He even attempted to wipe the taxi clean of fingerprints. The brazen crime took place in full view of witnesses, who promptly alerted the police. Once again, investigators collected fingerprints and other forensic evidence from the scene. Initially, police attributed the murder to a botched robbery, linking it to a recent string of cases where a man had directed cab drivers to Presidio Heights before holding them up at gunpoint. There was no inkling of a connection to the heinous serial killer. If you thought the Zodiac was hard to understand before, this murder threw everything into question. The murder of Paul Stein was almost a complete deviation from his usual methods. Unlike his earlier attacks, he robbed the victim, even taking the cash Stein had earned that day, and made an effort to wipe away evidence. The target was a lone man rather than a couple, leaving many puzzled over the killer's intentions in murdering Paul Stein. However, it wouldn't take long for this crime to be added to the Zodiac's list of killings. Just 3 days later, the Zodiac sent a letter to the San Francisco Chronicle, taking credit for Paul Stein's murder and enclosing a piece of Stein's blood-stained shirt as proof. It also turns out that the killer may have been spotted by the police. Two officers were en route to the crime scene when they had seen a white man walking nearby. According to some accounts, they hadn't approached him. However, another story suggests that the police stopped and had a conversation with the man before ultimately letting him go because the police were told that the suspect was a black man. Throughout 1970, the Zodiac continued to taunt law enforcement with his letters. In April, his tone shifted to outright arrogance when he sent a message that allegedly contained his name if one were to decode his cipher, known as Z13. The challenge with cracking this particular cipher lies in its brevity. With only 13 characters, interpretations can vary widely. On June 26th, the Zodiac escalated his threats with a postcard sent to the San Francisco Chronicle in which he requested that he wanted to see people wearing Zodiac buttons. When this did not catch on, the killer sent a more hostile letter. This time, he claimed he had recently killed a police officer, though investigators doubted the truth of this statement. He concluded with a grim tally. His score was 12. While the San Francisco Police Department had a score of 0. Enclosed with the letter was a map of Mount Diablo, along with a 32-symbol cipher. He claimed this code would reveal the location of a bomb he had supposedly buried, set to detonate in the fall. The so-called map cipher was never fully decoded, and no bomb was ever found. This would be the last cipher Zodiac sent. After a final letter in 1974, all communication from him abruptly ceased. The Zodiac's final stated score was 37, leading to efforts to connect a wide range of unsolved cases to him. One of the most notable claims linking the Zodiac to other crimes is the murder of Sherry Jo Bates, whose case we've covered in a previous episode. In a letter dated March 13, 1971, the Zodiac seemingly acknowledged the theories connecting him by congratulating authorities for uncovering his Riverside activity and hinting at more victims in the area. In November of 1972, investigators speculated that the Zodiac may have killed even earlier. Some believe he committed the 1963 murders of Robert Domingos and his fiancée, Linda Edwards. Both high school seniors were found shot to death in northern Santa Barbara County after the killer attempted to bind them. When they tried to escape, he shot them in the back and chest. The Zodiac would later hint at another possible victim, Donna Lass, who disappeared on September 6, 1970. Lass was a nurse at the Sahara Tahoe Hotel and Casino who vanished after her shift. Later, her employer and landlord each received calls saying she had left town for a family emergency, though no such emergency had occurred. Donna was never found. In a postcard to the San Francisco Chronicle, the Zodiac cryptically directed attention to her case with phrases like "peek through the pines" and "past Lake Tahoe areas," suggesting a possible link to her disappearance. When it comes to the Zodiac, the letters and communications are central to both suspect identification and the coherence of the case itself. But what if there's too much trust in the content of the letters? There's a common misconception that a suspect revealing information only the killer would know is a reliable indicator of guilt. In reality, such details would also be known by the police and sometimes journalists, and they're not above engineering a hoax. There's historical precedent for this. Both the Jack the Ripper and Black Dahlia cases saw fabricated letters allegedly written by the killers, sometimes even by journalists. Similarly, in the 1980s, false letters and a misleading audio recording claiming to be from Britain's Yorkshire Ripper allowed the real perpetrator to evade capture for years. True crime writer and former private investigator Thomas Henry Horan takes this idea even further, suggesting the entire Zodiac killer narrative could be a fabrication, with the letters being the only link between the crimes. This theory, while controversial and divisive in Zodiac investigation circles, raises interesting questions. Serial killers often evolve their methods, refining their modus operandi as they adapt. However, it is their signature, the psychological satisfaction they derive from killing, that remains constant. For the Zodiac, there appears little reason to radically alter his MO between killings, especially after the success of his first two claimed murders. The murder of Paul Stein in particular diverges starkly in both MO and signature from previous attacks, with robbery seeming to be the primary motivation. Moreover, none of Zodiac's threats were carried out, and without these letters and ciphers, connections among the crimes become tenuous. Ballistic evidence, fingerprints, and descriptions all varied, further casting doubt on a cohesive pattern. Horan proposes a theory that two individuals, a police officer and a true crime author, may have fabricated the Zodiac letters, pointing out that some claims in the letters mirror factual errors found in police reports. This suggests that the letter writer may have had access to police files, rather than first-hand knowledge of the crimes. The Zodiac case is perplexing. It portrays either an intelligent, calculating predator who left no trace, or a chaotic figure who left evidence behind and whose motives appeared to fluctuate. Despite the case's infamy, much remains unknown about the Zodiac's identity, motivations, and whether he truly existed as described. What if this shadowy figure wasn't the single, calculated predator the world has come to know? What if his infamous persona was as much a creation of public imagination and media frenzy as it was the result of his own twisted games? The evidence linking his crimes is tenuous. The ballistics don't match. The descriptions vary, and the fingerprints don't align. And as the Zodiac slipped into legend, his letters might have become the work of opportunists or a clever hoax, leaving us questioning not just his identity, but his very existence. The enigma of the Zodiac still lingers, and it seems unlikely that'll ever change. To this day, the truth of the Zodiac Killer remains still an unsolved mystery.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound, limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.